It's a great pleasure to be here, and Matt, thank you for that précis of my career, including many things that I had myself forgotten. But as you may have noticed, it has a pattern which I highly recommend to those of you who are at the start of your professional careers, and that is that you should begin in a senior policy position at a moment of economic crisis and transformation, and that's very good preparation for an entry into academic life as a policy essayist and a slow evolution toward the writing of technical papers for refereed journals. I mean, actually, basically, it's like one of those novels where time runs backwards, and it's much less stressful than doing it the other way around when you actually have to pass through professional peer review before you get anywhere. The ideas of economists and political philosophers, both when they are right and when they are wrong, are more powerful than is commonly understood. Indeed, the world is ruled by little else, madmen in authority who hear voices in the air. I'm going to spare you the full quotation. I, however, cite it for a reason, and that is that among the brand name economists of the day, the debate is over a phrase that goes back to Keynes's era or just after, the phrase being secular stagnation. This is defined by Larry Summers as the condition of a, quote, low real neutral rate of interest, or in Fed speak, a low R starred world, which is said to mean that the interest rate is neither expansionary nor contractionary in its effect on the state of aggregate demand, is close to zero. Investigating this is an interesting exercise in the exploration of the haunted house of the history of economic thought. One finds the ghost of Knut Wigzell paired with that of Dennis Robertson, the doctrine of a natural rate of interest commingled with the theory of loanable funds. In a recent paper from the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, which was cited by Summers as thoughtful, an economist named John Williams gave the, quote, underlying determinants of the neutral or natural rate as, quote, the global supply and demand for funds, including shifting demographics, lower trend productivity and economic growth, emerging markets seeking large reserves of safe assets, and a more general global savings glut. In other words, it's a grab bag. Based on reports from the Council of Economic Advisers, the International Monetary Fund, and leading lights of MIT and elsewhere. That report from the Council is by, at least in part, my 1974-75 King's College contemporary Maurice Obstfeld. And it is as remarkable a document as an economist might hope to find on White House letterhead. Consider this passage. The Ramsey model generates a fundamental link between per capita consumption growth, the real interest rate, and the growth rate of the economy. The model is based on the dynamic saving and investment decisions of a hypothetical, infinitely lived representative household. Reference to the model detail in an appendix is omitted here. In this setup, the household chooses an optimal saving investment plan to maximize the present value of utility from current and future consumption. We begin with the simplest version of the model, which assumes that the household has perfect foresight about the future. What else it would have perfect foresight about, it's not entirely made clear. Later discussion will take uncertainty into account. I hope that reassures you. As Bill Clinton used to say, say what? This is actually a government view? Early on, the paper gives a simplified version. quote, a high return on investment should trigger a reallocation of resources from consumption toward capital accumulation, driving down the marginal product of capital and the real interest rate over time. Similarly, a low return on investment should induce consumers to increase current consumption and reduce capital investment, eventually driving up the real interest rate. Such economic forces should limit extremely high or extremely low real interest rates and work to push the rate back to intermediate levels. The reference to the marginal product of capital raises the specter of capital theory, which was in fact a hot topic at Cambridge in 1975, although it seems that Morey missed that. As we know from Sraffa, and as Samuelson had already conceded in 1966, a more capital-intensive technique is not necessarily the more profitable at a low rate of interest, and an increase in capital accumulation does not necessarily lead to a lower rate of profit or